to break open all the new Apple products. You know that little dog, Frida? Is she really saving people in the Mexican earthquake? We find out. And Jeffrey Fowler says the iPhone 8 is the best model to avoid. Too bad mine comes tomorrow. All that and so much more coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1858, recorded Thursday, September 21st, 2017. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. With the Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Go to ring.com/TNT and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit. Hello and welcome to Tech News Today, the show where we gather up the tech news and toss it into our deep fat fryer so it tastes like chicken. I'm Megan Maroney. Jason Howell is out. Well, let's get right to the news today. And we have our guest because we are on the eve of the teardowns of many iPhone products. So Kelsey Weber from iFixit, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, okay, another beautiful iPhone, another iFixit teardown. Kelsey, you guys are going to not just tear down the iPhone 8s, you're going to tear down the Apple Watch and the new Apple TV. I know a lot of people have already gotten their review units. Apple is kind enough to send them these review units so that they write something on their website. I'm guessing Apple doesn't give you units to take apart.
No, they don't. They don't seem to really want us to open it up to show everybody what's inside, but that's the whole point behind our teardowns. We actually sent half of our teardown team to Australia. They're there right now. They've just intercepted they picked up the iPhone 8, the Plus, the Watch, and the TV. And we did that so we could beat the international dateline to show people what's inside these devices before people can pick them up, you know, tomorrow. They come in the mail tomorrow. So we want to inform consumers about, you know, the upgrades and things they can expect inside. And we want to talk about repairability because, as you know, that new iPhone 8 is going to have glass on both the front and the back. And so we're interested to get our hands on it to see how easy it's going to be to fix when it breaks. Glass sandwiches are breakable. You're going to break it. So we want to go in and look to see, you know, if consumers are, you know, getting what they want out of their upgrade and talk about repairability and inform consumers about repairability because it's important. Investing a lot of money into something that could possibly break, you should know that whether or not it's going to be fixable. So that's the whole point behind what we do with the teardowns.
And so I know you just tore down the Essential phone and you guys froze it. Do you think you would be doing some freezing?
Probably not. With Samsung and Apple devices, you know, we've been tearing them down for the last 10 plus years, and we kind of know what to expect once we get inside, but we don't have that advantage with new phones like the Essential. So we the first time we tore it down, we needed to get the super cool out to help us freeze off some of that adhesive. We did tear it down a second time, and while we didn't need to, you know, freeze it to get it open, it was still destructive process, which is why I got such a low repairability score. So we have a little bit of foresight going into the iPhone. We know how to get into these devices, so hopefully we won't have to bust out the super cold this time. But you never know. You never know.
So everyone's making fun of me because I ordered the iPhone 8 and everyone says, why don't you wait for the 10? And I keep saying, the glass back, the wireless charging. You've obviously taken apart phones that had glass backs before. This isn't the first one, but did you have the tools at the ready? Do you know what you'll be using?
Oh, yeah. So we have our teardown team took all their tools with them out to Australia. But we, you know, we've got our standard, our ProTech toolkit. We have an eye opener that softens, that you heat up in the microwave to soften adhesive. And sometimes if we have to, we'll have to bring out the heat gun and things like that. But we've got all the tools needed to get this thing open. And we want to get it open the way that the consumer would open it if they were to fix it, because we want to show that, you know, hey, we use the proper methods and this still isn't repairable or you're still going to break it when you get inside. So we always have the right tools and take our time in getting these things open to, you know, show consumers what it's really going to be like to fix it when it breaks.
Do you guys get Apple Care for these phones?
Actually, I'm not so sure. I have to ask the team. I don't do the ordering, but it's kind of a lost cause for us. There's no point because either, you know, we get into it and it's, you know, usable at the end, or, you know, something happens and we break it in the process. So maybe it wouldn't be too worth it for us. But yeah.
I think it would be worth it for your YouTube channel to call up and say, I accidentally took apart my new iPhone 8 with all these tools that I made. What can you do for me?
And I feel like the second they'd see that my email is Kelsey at iFixit, they'd be like, oh, no. Not for you, but no, we should. But yeah, so what's cool about the teardowns tonight is that they're happening live. So if you follow us on Twitter at iFixit, in a few hours, we are going to be tweeting a link to the teardown, and then we'll be tweeting throughout the night. So we're going to start in a couple hours, post the teardown live, and slowly but surely add some steps that have guide photo or photos in them, so you can start to see exactly what we're seeing as we take apart the phone. So if you follow us on Twitter, we'll be dropping in links to our teardown. Bookmark that teardown site and refresh it every few hours, because we'll have new photos and new text talking about the tech that's inside popping up as quickly as we can. So definitely want to follow us there. And if not, you can always go to ifixit.com/teardowns and you'll see the iPhone 8 teardowns pop up when they go live there as well. But Twitter's the place to be. I'll be manning the Twitter feed tonight, all night. And we'll be pushing out teardowns from now for the next few days as soon as we're getting them done. So yeah, if you follow our feed, you'll be definitely the first one to see what's inside. And maybe hopefully it'll help you make a decision whether or not you want to upgrade. I just got my iPhone 7 Plus. Actually, I upgraded from my iPhone 5 to my iPhone 7 Plus just under a year ago. And I'm definitely not ready to upgrade yet, but I'm excited to see what's inside the 8 Plus. So yeah, we'll see.
You are a smart consumer. Going from the 5 to the 7 is that there's no shame in that at all. You got you got your money's worth of that iPhone 5.
Yeah, definitely. It finally had a water spill happen on it, and it was the end of its life, and needed something with a cool camera for work. So that's why I ended up upgrading, but I held on to it for as long as I could. So we hope to help consumers make that good decision tonight, too.
And I'm excited to see what's inside the camera, what makes it different. I mean, because I've seen the photos that people have taken with the iPhone 8, the review units, and they look great. So, I assume you'll be taking apart every little piece of the camera as well.
Yeah, so it seems that the camera has got the same, you know, number of megapixels as the 7 Plus. But yeah, we'll take it all the way apart. I think for the iPhone 8, the big thing is going to come in with that A11, the Bionic chip. You know, that's kind of what's going to, you know, give you, you know, all the augmented reality and like a boost to the camera. So maybe some of the hardware might not look different, as different than, you know, we'd like compared to the 7 Plus. I think most of like the value and the giving it the iPhone 8 name is going to be probably from some of that software and the updates and things that are coming.
So of course, iFixit helps you decide whether you need to upgrade or not. You guys try to encourage people to fix their own stuff, try to encourage the companies to make the stuff more fixable, and you sell your kits. We should say that iFixit is a sponsor on the Twit Network. And so do you think that there will be new tools to buy with the iPhone 8? Or, I mean, we didn't even talk about the Apple Watch, the new Apple Watch and the Apple TV. Do you think you're going to require new tools?
So maybe not new tools unless there is a drastically different opening procedure. The things to soften the adhesive, prying tools, our opening tools, our iSlack, which pops the screen open just enough. Those will probably all stay standard, but we will have fix kits. We've got fix kits available for people that include tools and parts that you can buy together. So when your screen breaks, you buy one kit and you have everything you need, including the free guide on the iFixit site to do that repair yourself. And granted, we're gearing this towards people who, you know, we're going to be out of their warranty, you know, in a year or two. And so for those people, fixing it yourself might be financially, you know, more responsible for you in a sense. So yeah, so that's what we will be providing afterwards. Once we see inside, get, you know, figure, you know, source all of our parts and things like that, kits will be coming out to help people fix their iPhone 8.
Awesome. Well,
I can't wait
to see inside all of these products. Are you going to take a nap? before?
I did earlier. Okay, good. I did earlier. So I came in late, took a nap earlier. I'll be here from now until probably midnight or so. And then in the morning, our video team is going to make the teardown videos. So once the, you know, a teardown on the website is done, our video team comes in, we get our devices in the morning, just like everybody else. And then we start making videos for it. So if you want to see it, like, you know, the teardown happening in the moment, you can also follow us on YouTube, iFixit Video, and you can see all the teardown videos that'll come up just about a day after our teardowns post. So yeah, lots of content. So many teardowns all over the place. We need a lot of coffee. This team works really, really hard, and we're excited to bring you the new Apple products.
And it's apparently not it's the safest job you could have either. I asked, like, what was the worst injury that you had taking apart these devices? And you sent me a photo of, I should have given a warning. That's not your hand, is it? What happened there?
No. This is Scott. He's on our teardown team. When they were trying to dissect the AirPods, getting past some of that tough plastic, your tools can slip. You might stab your thumb or your finger. It happens. I mean, you know, when you break and your phone, the screen can get all like shattered and you can cut your finger on that. Well, the same thing can happen while we're trying to figure out how to get into these devices. So no one is safe here. But our team is well equipped. They should be fine this time. But yeah.
Awesome. Well, I hope there are no similar injuries tonight, but good luck. And you can follow Kelsey. If you didn't, we'll put all those links in the show notes, but you can follow her on Twitter at Kelsey Fixes. That's K-E-L-S-E-A Fixes on Twitter. And I'm sure she'll have all the links to the YouTube videos.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Kelsey.
No problem. Have a good night.
You too. After the break, managing editor of Snopes, Brooke Binkowski, is here to talk about how you can use your tech and your time to help victims of the recent earthquakes, floods, and hurricanes. But first, let's take a minute to thank the Ring Video Doorbell, the sponsor of this episode. Today, over a million people use the amazing Ring Video Doorbell to help protect their homes. Ring knows that home security begins at the front door, but it doesn't end there. That's why they're extending the same level of security to the rest of your home with the Ring Floodlight Cam. I have one right here. Here it is. This is one, and you can get one or two. You can get many. That's how it attaches to the back to your electricity. And it's got this camera here, and it'll show 1080p. It's a 1080p camera, which is great, and the floodlight. So you'll get a really good picture of your subject. Hopefully it's someone you know that came to drop off the leaf blower that they borrowed last week, and it's not a zombie or a robber or one of your children coming home and sneaking in. With HD video and two-way audio, it lets you know the moment any of those zombies or your children or your friendly neighbor steps onto your property. You can see and speak to that visitor. Let's hope it's a visitor. Even set off an alarm right from your phone. With the floodlight cam that I just showed you, when things go bump in the night, you'll immediately know what those things are. So if you're home or even if you're on vacation, as long as you have your smartphone, Ring Floodlight Cam lets you keep an eye on your home. You can even pretend that you are at home. Oh, I'm inside. I'll pick up that later. Thank you so much. Ring Floodlight Cams offer the ultimate in home security with high visibility floodlights and a powerful HD camera that puts security in your hands. And that's why it was named the Wall Street Journal's Best of CES 2017. Monitor every corner of your property with a Ring of Security kit. So that's not just the floodlight. All kits include a Ring Video Doorbell and your choice of either one, two, or three floodlight cameras. Connect your Ring Video Doorbell with your favorite smart locks and all your hubs. It's super convenient. You have everything connected. You can monitor and you can feel more secure. With Ring, you're always home. Save up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit when you go to ring.com/TNT. That's ring.com/TNT. And we thank Ring for their support. Hurricanes, floods, earthquakes, and more have been filling the news for weeks. It's hard to sit back in our comfortable living rooms reading tweets and wondering what we can do about it. But it's also pretty easy to get fooled by scams when we want to help. Brooke Binkowski, managing editor of Snopes.com, is here to help. Thanks for joining us, Brooke.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
So you're not only a longtime journalist and a reporter, and you're also the managing editor at Snopes. You were also a spokesperson for a group that started to provide help through Twitter after Harvey. Tell us about that.
Well, it's called Crowd Rescue now. Sorry. Crowd Rescue HQ. And before that, we were calling it Harvey Rescue. And basically, it was just a group of people who were talking, you know, a group of friends who were talking on Twitter. And we were all getting so frustrated because we kept seeing all these calls for help on Twitter and on Facebook, and nobody could really do anything about it. So we decided to start kind of collating all these addresses and descriptions of people who needed help and handing them out to rescue groups. So we started working with the Cajun Navy, and we started working with Team Rubicon. Eventually, we started working with other groups like the Coast Guard and FEMA, and just kind of like, you know, we weren't doing anything official. We were just saying, here's some information that we found, and we have a live map, you know, and you can go look at the map and see where people need help. And it helped people get help to them faster, especially since 911 was overwhelmed. And that was our biggest concern, because we saw people basically, you know, calling for help as they drowned in real time. And we got, eventually we got like 700 volunteers, and people were doing all this, you know, pulling, they called it scrubbing Twitter. Actually, I say it in the past tense, but it's still going on. I just had to refocus my efforts because I was doing it and I just wasn't sleeping. So I kind of had to pull back a little bit. And, you know, it's just been one thing after another. But In every place, every time there's a disaster, 911 or whatever line you have to call in order to contact authorities gets completely overwhelmed for large scale issues like this. So we're thinking that we're not doing something that's completely new, but we are doing something that hasn't really been attempted in the United States before on a large level, because of the specific laws apparently that govern privacy. You know, the government can't really go into people's personal information and try to collate it all together. So it had to be sort of this volunteer effort, and that's what we did. We didn't know this at the time, by the way. We were just trying to kind of, you know, run around and help somehow.
And so what can people do now if they want to join the organization or help from where they are?
Well, contact us. Crowd Rescue HQ on Twitter is probably the best way to do it. We're still active. Everybody's still, you know, around, although a lot of us, like me, have gotten, you know, tired and had to sort of pass the torch, but we're still working with a team of trusted volunteers, and we can absolutely put people to work. There's no shortage of disasters, especially if you speak Spanish right now. We would love to talk to you.
And of course, this overlapped a little bit in your day job, which is managing editor at Snopes, and you had to tweet a post, you had to repost an article just stating that President Obama wasn't the president during Katrina. And so do you find that there's a lot of overlap between like flood and hurricane and disaster news and what you guys do at Snopes?
Oh, absolutely. Because, you know, and stuff like that, when there's times of mass confusion, it's also just a perfectly ripe time for misinformation and disinformation. And certain people do take advantage of this, whether it's, you know, because they think it's funny or because they're benefiting financially off of it or because they're chaos agents or whatever you want to say. They are just, some people are just extremely invested in muddying the waters or stirring the pot. And, part of the reason I got involved with Crowd Rescue is because I covered Katrina from the Astrodome in Houston back when it happened in 2005. And it indelibly marked me. I mean, it indelibly marked a lot of people. But as a reporter, it sort of made me refocus my journalism. I started out wanting to be a conflict reporter and a war reporter and, you know, all that glamorous stuff, like charging off to battle on your white steed or however people think of themselves when they're doing conflict situations. And I didn't avoid conflict as a journalist after that, but I refocused everything to humanitarian concerns because I realized that there is much more important work to be done as a journalist that is overlooked in the humanitarian sector and the rebuilding efforts and what happens afterwards. And a lot of that is dealing with the kind of nasty rumors that come up afterwards.
So you use the phrase chaos agents, which I hadn't heard and I love. Like, do you run into that a lot? Like when you're writing pieces on Snopes, that's who is creating this, just a chaos agent just doing it for laughs?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. For the lulz, right? So I unfortunately didn't coin that phrase. I've been reading a lot of white papers about disinformation efforts, particularly coming from Russian government agents and things like that. And of course, the reason we're reading about that is because it's happening in real time around us. And I'm not I don't mean to go into Russia truther territory or anything like that, but there definitely is a significant amount of misinformation and disinformation that's coming out of Russia and Macedonia and a few other countries. And so we encounter this a lot because right now it's very easy to say you have no financial stake in it whatsoever, or you don't have any sort of political stake in it either. You just think it's funny. Like, it's totally possible to plant a plausible sounding story on Twitter and within 24 hours have news agencies picking it up. And some people like that. They get off on it. It's entertaining and funny to them. And I can see how in under certain circumstances, trolling the entire news media would be funny. But unfortunately, in situations that are already chaotic, it causes significant problems and puts people's lives at risk.
And so, of course, a lot of people, as you mentioned, are doing this for financial reasons. Do you have any recommendations for people if they want to donate money or even go and donate time to another organization? Do you have recommendations on how to vet those sources?
Yeah, I mean, there are lists on top of lists of places that you can donate to or that you can volunteer with. I think right now in the rebuilding efforts, post Harvey and Irma in particular, and I'm not even focusing for the moment on Maria and I can't even remember the rest Irma. Of the names of the. Yeah, but there's another. Oh, well, anyway, you know, it's just been one after the other. And plus the earthquakes in Mexico and just all the things that are happening and the flooding in Bangladesh and India. It's so overwhelming right now. So there are lists of reputable places that you can donate to. And again, they need money more than manpower at the moment, but I would say contact them. I know that the Red Cross has been getting a lot of bad press recently. A lot of that is fake news. Some of it is deserved. You know, some of the criticism that they get is deserved for mismanagement of funds in the past and things like that. But the things that you're hearing right now, I don't know if you are, but there's a lot of stories going around about how they're taking donations and selling them or burning them in dumpsters and, you know, things like that. It's completely untrue. So I still consider them reputable. There's also the related, of course, Red Crescent. There's groups like Salvation Army, Cajun Navy, people on the ground. And then you can also find lists of places that have been vetted that are reputable on mainstream news sites, Washington Post, the Houston Chronicle, Naples News is what I was reading today for about the Irma cleanup. They all list local sources and local places that you can donate to, so you know that your money is going to local organizations that will help people directly.
So there's a piece on Snopes that's been around for a while about a dog that saved a bunch of people's lives on 9/11. I believe her name is Daisy. And
yes.
I, like everyone else, wanted to believe that's true, but it's not. So now that there's a new dog, her name is Frida the rescue dog. She is in, there's a picture of her. She's wearing goggles, which makes her extra cute. And she allegedly saved many people after the Mexico earthquake. Can you just take us through what, when we see a story like this, how do we know whether it's true or not? I mean, I see her, she's getting some booties on with a guy who's in camouflage. How do I know whether Frida is really saving people or not?
Well, Frida is actually pretty well known. So I've seen pictures and stories about her from people who I know are on the ground in Mexico City because I have a lot of connections to Mexico. And I'm actually not talking about Mexico too much only because I'm pretty I still haven't processed it. Mm. It's so big and so terrible. I haven't heard from some of my friends in Mexico City still. And I'm still kind of going, OK, so I'm trying to if I start talking about it too much, I'm going to be like, you know, and so, but my friends who I'm in contact with, who are now doing rescue and recovery and the journalists who are covering it have sent me pictures and things like that of Frida. And, the thing to me that stands out besides the fact that I trust the sources who are sending me stories about Frida, they could be totally wrong too, but it's presented without this sort of what we call glurge at Snopes. It's presented without that sort of like saccharine emotionality that the Daisy story has to it. It's like, you know, this dog is a hero and saved precious lives, you know, things like that. It's more like, here's Frida. She's a working dog and she's helping send out people trapped in the rubble. And that to me is one of the biggest indicators that a story is either true or has been either changed up to be sexier or is completely false. Like, sorry, like Daisy.
So look for the glurge.
Yes. Well, look for the glurge and avoid it. Any okay. emotional, anything that makes you upset just by virtue of reading the words, like that has emotional words in it, is probably being ginned up somehow or is utterly fake.
So Snopes has been around since 1994, I learned today by reading an article in Wired. You've been there since 2015, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So you have a long history of journalism and, you know, NPR, Atlantic, all the big names. Are you the only journalist there, or do you have a team of journalists working there?
Oh, no, we have a whole team. We have everybody who works here has worked in journalism in some capacity or another, in editorial. And I think some capacity or another, they're all journalists, but they've all worked for different organizations. And so I've got, if I do say so myself, I think that we've put together a really good team of people, and I'm very proud.
But it's small, right? I mean, it's a very small team.
Yeah, it's very small. There's 14 of us overall within editorial. I think, hang on, we work remotely and I never count us. So I think it's 11. And then there's the advertising people, well, person, the IT guy, you know, so we're tiny. And that means that given journalists' way of being, I frequently have to tell everybody to pack it in and go home and get some rest. And well, we're all home already because we work remotely, but I have to tell them to like log off, get off the phone, stop working and go do something fun because it's so easy for us. You know, there's so much to do and there's so little time to do it. And we all really want to do what we're doing. We think it's very important.
I think it's amazing when such a small team is able to be. I mean, Wired had this great quote in the piece about how when your cousin's best friend's sister starts a trash fire on Facebook, Snopes is the extinguisher that you use. Everybody uses it to put out those fires. And it's amazing that you're such a small team. Thank you so much for taking the time. I hope that you get some sleep because I think you have been working overtime.
it's easy to do, but we always say to each other, everybody says to me and then I say back to them because of course I'm working 24/7. I'm like, go home and get some rest. And they're like, oh yeah, okay. Well, when you do. But we feel like we need to be working right now. There's stories that need to be covered that really need to be told at the moment. And so after this is over, this is what we said last November too. After this is over, we're all going on vacation. And by this, I mean the current fake news crisis.
Well, I will keep following you on Twitter to make sure you go on vacation. You're at Brooklyn Marie on Twitter. And is that the best place, do you think, to follow your work?
Absolutely. Especially late at night when I start getting saucy after a beer. You know, it's the best way to okay. I try to, when I'm proud of something that we've done, I'll put it out there.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us, Brooke.
Thank you. Take care.
Take care. And we have some feedback from Nick from Sujo writes, I just downloaded Egg Incorporated based off your glowing review. As soon as I downloaded it, I recognized it as a more refined version of a game I played for a few weeks a few years ago. It was called Adventure Capitalist. After playing that game for 2 or 3 weeks, I realized it was a total waste of my time, more so than most mobile games. After playing Egg Incorporated for 2 hours, I can already tell that I am going to get the same feeling in 2 days, but in the meantime, I'm enjoying it very much. Thanks for the recommendation. Keep them coming, especially if they are crappy time-wasting games. Those are the best. Thank you, Nick. My children also play Adventure Capitalist. It's one of those super addicting games. They fight over it constantly, and you have to like keep logging in, and it's the worst, and they love it. But you know, sometimes you love crappy things, and that is life. TNT's fan of the day is the Inspector, who says he watches TNT on a hacked Nintendo Switch running through a proxy on his laptop. That's pretty amazing. I tried to get his secrets off of the laptop, but I couldn't understand any of them. But maybe you can. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT, record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it on Instagram, Google+, where Jason still checks, Twitter, where I check every day, or Facebook. Use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT and we will find it. Tomorrow, my iPhone 8 arrives, and just in time, Jeffrey Fowler, tech columnist for the Wall Street Journal, says I shouldn't have ordered it. Welcome back to the show, Jeff.
Oh my gosh. You should have called me before you put in that order.
I know. Well, I put it in before I think they do that on purpose. They don't, you know, they lift the embargo after the order date.
They do. Mm-hmm. They do a lot of things on purpose.
So you write that with so many iPhone choices this fall, the iPhone 8 is the best model to avoid. Why?
Here's the thing. If you have an iPhone 7, or even an iPhone 6S, or maybe even arguably an iPhone 6, And I secretly went in and swapped it for an iPhone 8. I bet you money you could not tell the difference.
What about the glass back?
It's true. It's got a glass back, which I don't like. I think it's actually the metal and especially that polished surface on the iPhone 7 was actually much sexier looking. But yes, if you did notice the back and you don't have a case on it, maybe you would pay attention to that. But you're not really getting any benefit out of it. And that's really, I think, the thing to talk about here. It's like, what are you getting for the phone that Apple wants to charge more for than they've ever charged for a flagship phone, right? It's like $50 more than they were charging last year for the iPhone 7. What are you actually getting? And the standout feature here is glass back. That's for wireless charging. And I got to say, living with wireless charging on an iPhone for a while hasn't been great. That wireless charging pad has not earned a spot next to my bed, for its nightly charging ritual, because you have to get it on just the right spot on that thing for it to take. And if you're off just ever so slightly, you're in for a nasty surprise, which has happened to me several times now, where you come back and you thought your phone was charging and you realize it's actually dead. So I just really don't think that's something that most people need to be spending a premium to get, especially when the iPhone 7, still a fantastic phone, costs $150 less.
Okay, so I've been calling the iPhone 8 the bridesmaid phone, because it's almost as pretty as the bride, perhaps even prettier than the bride, but it's available now. What do you say to that?
I've been calling it the Goldilocks phone. We're both winding with metaphors here. I love it. I do like a good metaphor.
Yours is more appropriate than mine, but that's okay.
it's the one in the middle of the pack. But I think one thing that's kind of interesting and that we should talk about is Apple has changed how they sell us products. Used to be that Apple pretty much came out with one thing and they said, this is the future. You better like it and we're going to charge you a ton of money for it. And often, not always, but often they were right and people did buy it and they were happy they did. But now this year, we have so many different iPhones to choose from at prices ranging from $350 to well over $1,000. And so I think there's this sense that you got to buy this just because, oh, it's the new iPhone. But no, actually, now choosing an iPhone is becoming about choosing the right fit for you. I just don't think this is the right fit for most people.
And so did you have a case on it when you put it on the charging pad? Like, is it possible that without a case, you wouldn't have to place it right on the right place?
I tried it both ways, and I had failures both ways. So yes, it can charge through at least Apple's own leather cases. The charge still goes through that, which is actually a little disturbing if you think about it. But anyway, it works, but I had problems both ways. Apple says they're going to solve some of these problems, by the way, with, you just showed a picture of their own charging pad that they say they're making, which can, you don't have to put it right in the middle and it can do several devices at once, including an Apple Watch if you have the new one, or AirPods, which if you get a new case for them. If you buy a new case, it's Apple. You always got to buy a new thing. But it's not coming out till next year, so it wasn't really a thing that we could test yet.
And so what about the camera? Did it do anything? Were there your pictures any better than the 8, than the 7 Plus?
Well, you know me. I love taking pictures. It's my hobby. I do it for fun. I went on vacation recently and took 4,000 pictures. So with this new iPhone, I took 1,500 test shots. I used the iPhone 8 and then I compared it, the same shots, to the iPhone 7. Then I also carried a Samsung Note 8, compared it to that, and the Pixel XL, which is a year old now, but still actually does some incredible work, particularly in dark and night shots. So I would say the majority of the shots, the iPhone 8 did better. Some cases, the Samsung was a little better. Some cases, the Pixel, especially again in those night shots, was a little bit better. But the question is, how much better? Actually, on my Instagram, I posted a bunch of examples, and you can swipe through and compare for yourself. The differences were kind of like the difference, you know, when you take a photo and you bring it into Instagram and you use that Lux thing that they've got at the top. Mm-hmm. You just slide and it kind of, you know, increases the saturation, adjusts the lighting. So it feels like Apple applied one of those to all of its photos, which is to say there's a little bit more contrast. There's a little bit more saturation in the color, but there's not a ton more detail. There were not like a lot of magic tricks. And like for moving from the iPhone 6S to the 7, I felt like for the first time I could really take photos in really dark places, like in a bar. But it's nothing like that here. You have to be a photo person to really notice these differences. You have to really appreciate those sorts of things. The one area where I say anybody could really tell the difference is they changed the flash. So normally I just avoid the flash on smartphones altogether. Now actually with the iPhone 8, I might use it. It's some sort of slow sync flash that brightens up the background as well as the foreground, so you no longer look like you're like a raccoon caught on like a security video with your face all blown out. It's much more evenly lit. So that can make a difference. And I've got an example of that linked off my review on the Journal website too.
So the iPhone 10, obviously you can order that at the end of next month. What are your feelings on the notch? You went to the event, right?
I did, yeah. And I spent a little time with the phone there. Obviously, they weren't letting us test the face unlock feature, which is kind of the big thing that needs some serious vetting and some serious testing. I'm okay with the notch as a design feature. I think Apple's going to own it. It does get in the way if you go full screen on a video, but there's an option you can press to make it kind of shrink a little bit so you don't have to see that. I think having that much more screen on the smaller form factor is going to be a good thing for a lot of Apple users. Now, I'm sure there's a lot of viewers who are like, hey, Samsung's had that for almost a year now. And it's true. And the Samsung phones are beautiful. And especially if you hold, that S8 or that Note 8 up to the iPhone 8, like there's no comparison. Samsung is ahead on design. So the iPhone 10 really is kind of Apple's answer to that. And I think, again, I need to spend some more time with it, but I think that we'll get to see it as a beautiful thing too.
And do you still have the Note 8 for review?
I do.
And how would you compare, let's say I'm someone who was like, I can go either way to Android or iPhone. I might make the switch from one way or the other. What would you say to me if I was thinking about iPhone 8 or Note 8?
I feel like Note people are their own kind of niche. And these are fascinating people. These people like love working on their phone, right? For them, that stylus is really key. And they just love being able to like scribble and, run two apps at once. And so that is a niche of people who are not going to want an iPhone, right? Because the iPhone is never going to do all those Samsung-y things. They're never going to have a stylus that works with an iPhone. So I feel like there's actually not a ton of overlap there. I think there might be some between S8 people and an iPhone 10 people because they're similarly sized and similar screens. And that kind of comes down to who you really want to trust all of your apps and services and data with. Some people love those Google services and some people swear by the Apple ones and Apple's promises that they're going to keep it private. I feel like we're entering a world where these companies do such a good job of locking you into their ecosystem through their messaging apps, through their photo apps, that it's really hard to switch between them now. Like they're happy traps, if you will, that they keep you happy and also keep you from ever leaving.
Happy traps. I love that. Yeah, I mean, it's true. You will be ostracized from all your friend groups if you switch, if you're a regular iMessage user and you switch to Android and then you mess everything up, we might as well not be friends anymore.
Right. iMessage is the most important social network in a lot of people's lives.
All right. Well, so you might not know this or you might not be able to say, but I'll ask the question anyway. Will you and Joanna Stern, your East Coast counterpart, both be reviewing the iPhone 10?
We certainly are very interested in it. We're not there yet. I don't think Apple's even finished working on the product yet. So we'll just have to check back in. But you know how to reach me.
Okay, I do. Thank you so much. And I would like you to be able to get out there on the jet ski with the Apple Watch like Joanna does. I think it's not fair that she gets to do that and go underwater in scuba gear.
It's true. First, I've got it here. First, it has to work. And as you probably read, it doesn't.
Okay, so you do have the watch with cellular and you're having problems as well.
Giant problems. It's the least performing Apple product I've ever seen out the gate. The last message I got on this watch, which is tethered to a different phone that I don't have near me, came at 7:35 this morning. So the LTE is simply not working on it for me. So Apple has said they're going to fix that. So we're standing by for that fix.
Well, thank you so much. Jeffrey Fowler is a personal technology columnist, reviews products, has great pieces, great opinion pieces. Check out his stuff at the Wall Street Journal, or you can follow him. He is Jeffrey Fowler on Twitter. Thanks so much for joining us.
You bet.
Take care. And finally, here is an update on the discussion yesterday about whether or not Google was going to buy HTC. Today, both companies officially announced that a $1.1 billion deal happened where Google will acquire the majority of HTC's phone design and engineering teams. Google is going to war against the iPhone, apparently. Many HTC employees who worked on the Pixel smartphone will join Google. So this is exciting news if you're a hardware fan, if you're a Google hardware fan. So we will see what happens next. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern. You can be part of the show. Yes, you. By emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. We love your comments. We love your questions. We love your corrections. You can also find us on Twitter. That's also a great way to get in touch with us at Tech News Today TV. We would love it if you subscribe to the show. That's how you support what we do. twit.tv/TNT. Even if you watch live, which I know is fun, also subscribe to the show. That way you get some credit. So do we. And if you want to tell me why I shouldn't have ordered the iPhone 8, if you have more reasons than Jeffrey did, please tweet that at me. I'm at Megan Maroney. Thank you to Kevin, who is both our technical director and also possibly our editor. And thank you to that guy, Burke, for helping out in the studio. Although I don't know if there was no Burke cam or you had nothing to say. No room. You did actually give me some tips during even though I have this little earpiece, I only hear me and my guest. Burke has to just whisper at me, which is wonderful because he has lots of good advice. And thank you to you. I wish you could whisper advice to me during the show. But like I said, you can find me on Twitter. Thank you for being with us. And we will see you tomorrow.